want to spend a few moments this morning with the Bible open and consider the role of the family in the local church. Christianity is an individual religion. What I mean by that is that God has no grandchildren. We are all God's children equally. Now, there was a time in which God dealt with mankind through the heads of the families, through the patriarchs. We refer to that as the patriarchal dispensation. It was important to be a part of a family to have that connection with God. And there came to be a time in which God separated out one nation, and he dealt specifically with that nation through a law, and so it was important to be a part of that nation, to have that covenant relationship with God. But now, on this side of the cross, God extends his mercy and grace to us through a new and a better covenant that deals with us individually. We know that we will all appear before the judgment seat of Christ and that we will receive as individuals the things that we have done and that we have said. The local church is made up of individual members. We realize that. However, among some of our members here at Knollwood, there are those who are part of physical families. And we have members, but we realize some of them are a part of families. And that family unit is playing a God-given role in and of itself. But I believe also in the local church that family unit is going to have some unique opportunities and thus some unique responsibilities that they are going to bring to the local church. And that's what I want to talk about for a few moments here this morning. I was talking earlier this week with Mike Heppner, and I told him, I said, Mike, I don't know that I've ever been a part of a local church that has so many single members as Knollwood does. And I might be wrong about that, but there are a lot of members of the congregation here who are widows or widowers, who are divorced, or who have never been married. They're single, and that's okay. That's good. I am somewhat, I don't want to use the word concerned. Maybe I don't preach on marriage, and I don't preach on the home and the family as often as I should, because I have in my mind there's a large number of members here who aren't in that situation right now. And so maybe I err on a side of caution that I shouldn't. So I don't address that as often. Like today, we're talking about the family, and I realize that there are a good number of members here who could tune that out. That doesn't apply to me. I don't want anyone leaving the assembly today thinking that if you're not married and you're not in a family and you're not raising children, that somehow you're a second-class citizen in the Lord's kingdom. Nothing could be further from the truth. Our Lord was single. There were many single men and women in the scriptures that we are to look to, that are held up to us as examples of what we are to be if we're to be pleasing unto God. So I don't want any member here thinking that they're somehow second rate because they are or are not in a physical family here at the Knollwood congregation. That being said, I do want to spend some time today talking about the family and talking about that unique situation, the unique potential, and the unique opportunities that those who are in a family unit have to offer to a local congregation, whether it be Knollwood or wherever it is that you're a member as a family. What are some things that you bring to the local church? Well, let's consider, number one, the unique things that a family can contribute to the local work and worship of the church. And I want to look at Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4 and at verse 16. I'm guessing this is becoming one of my favorite passages in the New Testament because I'm often drawn to it and I often read it in my preaching and in my teaching. In Ephesians chapter 4, the Apostle Paul tells us to walk worthy of our calling and tells us that we are to endeavor to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. And he wraps it up here in verse 16 when he says, "From whom the whole body, joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love." We want to see the local church grow. We want to see it grow spiritually. We want to see it grow numerically. How's that going to happen? If every part, if every joint, if every member is supplying what they can. Every one of us brings something unique because God has made us as unique individuals. But there are some things that the family unit can contribute to the local church as a family. Now, let's consider attendance. Let's start with something just as easy as attendance. Think about this. If an individual member misses, that's one thing. If a family of four or six is gone, that's something else. Your attendance here is important. We know Hebrews chapter 10, verse 25, we are not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together as is the manner of some, but we're to exhort one another. And so have your family here to be exhorted, but also to exhort. We benefit from the families that are here, from all the children that are here. We benefit from that. That helps us so much. So be here, and be here regularly. Be here for every service that you can attend. And let's include Bible classes here. Have your children here for their Bible classes. Our teachers work so hard in developing and teaching the Bible classes for all of the ages. The elders work hard. There's a lot of hard work that goes on behind the scenes for that. Have your family here for the Bible classes on the Lord's Day and on Wednesday as well. And parents, help your children to get their material ready, their class material done for class. Have their lessons done. Make sure that they're showing up with their lessons filled out and their lessons done. That's something that you can do as a family. Volunteer. As we continue to grow here at Knollwood, there are going to be more needs. There are going to be more areas where people need to step up and fill the gap. You can do that as a family. Preparing communion, I think, is a great thing for a family to be doing, for the children in the family to be learning how to do that, the responsibility that goes with that, calling on those who are absent, being a part of the visitation groups as a family, signing up to feed the visiting preacher during a gospel meeting. That list is already up, and there's already a couple of families that have signed up to do that. Now, I'm thankful for that, and I know it's going to get filled out, but do that as a family. That's something you can do. So volunteer as a family. A single Barnabas is great. How about an entire family of Barnabases? Work with your family, work with your children on being encouragers, to encourage those who are in need, to lift up those hands that are hanging down. When you send a card to somebody, have the entire family sign it. Mom and Dad and all the children. Do that as a family. Be encouragers. That's something that you can contribute as a family. And responding to visitors and helping the visitors that we have. Teach your children, teach every member of your family to be looking out for those who are visitors. And they see somebody new at the services. You don't want the children in your family walking into the building and turning to you and saying, "Someone's got our seat." You don't want that happening. No, teach your children to look for visitors, to say hello to visitors. And when we dismiss to our Bible classes and they see someone their age, "I know where your class is. Let me help you find your class." And that's something that you can do as a family. So we as individuals can do all these things, but as families, I want you to think about your family being involved in contributing to what's happening here at Knollwood in these different areas. So what can you do as a family? You can help to contribute to the work and the worship of the church here at Knollwood. Secondly, let's look at James chapter 1 and verse 27 and spend a few moments thinking about visitation. Visitation. James 1 verse 27 says, "Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world." The word visit here in this text, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble, the word visit doesn't mean you stop by and say hello and watch a little bit of the game on TV with them. It's taken from a Greek word that means to look upon in order to help or relieve. And that's why what's specified here is orphans and widows. Here are people that in Bible times, before you had organizations by the government and different groups in town, these are people who were in need. These were individuals who needed help. Today, we can look out and we can see people who are in need. We can see people who need help. We can be visiting them. That is, we can be going to them to help to relieve them as a family. I want you to think about doing this as a family. Why should I do this as a family? Why should I get my children involved in going and visiting and helping those who are sick and those who need help? Well, do you want your children to have pure and undefiled religion? Do you want your children to have that? Yes, you do. We all do. This is a part of it, and they need to be taught this. Now, I'll pause right here. Some wisdom needs to be employed. There are some people when they are sick, there are some people when they are distressed, they don't need a house full of people coming to see them. They don't need children brought to see them. So we need to exercise some wisdom here. There may be some situations we're not ready to bring our children into, or that individual doesn't need that at this time. But if you think about it, you ask about it, and realize that something that would be appropriate, take your children. Go and do it as a family. Get in the habit of visiting those who are sick, those who are shut-ins, as an entire family. Where we lived before in Texas, there was a nursing home there in that small community, and the members of the congregation did a lot in that nursing home. And so I got to know some of the people there, and I would notice that anytime children came in, anytime we brought children in, faces would light up in that place. The people there, all they see all day long are the adult staff or the people their age who are struggling as well. And to just see a child come through would brighten their face and would make their day. That's something that you can do as a family. Our children need to learn what it's like to prepare a meal and not eat a bite of it because it's given to somebody else. To make a whole batch of cookies and it's not for them, but it's being made for the purpose of giving to someone else. They need to learn how to invest some of themselves and their time into doing something for somebody else. To help clean somebody else's house, to help rake somebody else's lawn. It's good for families to learn how to do this and for children to learn how to do this. When they get older, when your children get older, they may still be uncomfortable going to places like nursing homes and hospitals and funeral homes. They may still be uncomfortable doing that, but they won't be unfamiliar with it. They'll know how to do it. So start now. If you're not doing so already, use some wisdom. Pray for some wisdom. But get more involved in helping those who need help. That's pure and undefiled religion. And we can help our children to have that. Let's think now, instead of making something to take to somebody else, let's think for a moment about having people who are in need into our home. Let's talk about hospitality for just a moment. It's one thing to take something to someone else's home. You can You can go and you can see it and you can drop it off and you can leave. You can leave. But it's another thing entirely to invite them to come into your home. Well, not only do you need to make something, but you need to clean up the house as well. And if you don't think so, ask your helpmeet. Yes, it's important. You need to have that house looking presentable. It takes a lot more work. A lot more work to extend that hospitality, to practice that hospitality. But the scriptures call upon us to do so. Reading just a few verses from the New Testament that talk about hospitality in Romans chapter 12. Again, this is that chapter in the book of Romans that has those bullet points. Now that you're giving yourself as a living sacrifice under Christ, here's some things that you do. And here in Romans chapter 12 and at verse 13, distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality. Given to hospitality means that you're pursuing it, that it's something that you're motivated to do. It's not something that you'll do. Well, if it ever comes up, yes, we'll do hospitality if we ever have to. No, we're to be devoted to that. We're to be pursuing that. In Hebrews chapter 13 and at verse 2, do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some have unwittingly entertained angels. So bringing people into our home that we know, yeah, we're a lot more comfortable about opening up our home to relatives and friends that we're close to, that we know really well. But doing this with strangers, doing this with maybe members of the congregation we don't know very well. Maybe it's new members of the congregation. I'll have more to say about that in just a moment. Maybe it's a visitor to the services and you don't know them at all. It's a stranger. Well, the scriptures address that. We're to remember them. We are not to forget to entertain and to help them. In the book of 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 9, 1 Peter chapter 4 verse 9 says, be hospitable to one another without grumbling. Grumbling, complaining about it, murmuring, will undo whatever good the hospitality does. So let's do it, and let's do it without grumbling. Let's do it without murmuring. I want to suggest, you cannot have a Christian home without the presence of hospitality. You just can't. It has to be there. Hospitality played a very important role in the beginning of the church. In Acts chapter 2, when all of these disciples, all these new converts were there in Jerusalem, they needed each other. They relied upon each other. They continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship, the breaking of bread and prayers. They were devoted to that in verse 42. They were together, verse 44, had all things in common. But look at verse 46. So continuing daily with one accord in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, they ate their food with gladness and simplicity of heart. They were in each other's homes, sharing a meal. In the ancient Near East, that was a very important thing, a very significant thing, to share a meal with someone. A very significant thing. Not so much in our society today, but still, to open your home and to have somebody in and to share that meal is a very significant thing, and it's a way of growing closer. I don't believe, if you look at chapter 2 and verse 46 and see their practice of being together house to house on a daily basis, then I'm not surprised when we get to chapter 4 and verse 32 and read, now the multitude of those who believed were of one heart and one soul. What contributed to that? Well, several things contributed to that, but chapter 2 verse 46 went a long way. They were together, and they were in each other's homes, and that caused them to be close together. Hospitality was important then, and hospitality is important today. It helps us to grow closer. Time that we can spend with each other outside of this assembly. That doesn't mean we need to cancel the assembly so that we can go do something else. No, outside of the assembly, the time that we can spend together is going to help us to be closer. It's going to help new converts to form relationships. If you're one of these charter members of the Knollwood congregation. Now, you've had it made in one respect because you've gotten to know members at your own pace. They've come in one at a time. They've come in sporadically. Put yourself in the place of someone who's new. They've got to learn all these names. They've got to get to know all these people. They've got to figure out who's related to who. And I tell people, just assume we're all related. Just assume we're all related and then work from there. When we first moved here, the old hard copy picture directory was hanging on the wall out in the foyer. And I'll confess, the first couple of months that we were here, I spent a lot of time standing in front of that directory, learning people's names, learning who people were, and seeing how outdated some pictures were also. But I had a lot of names to learn. Hospitality is one way that you and I can help new converts to get a jump start on that. Have them into your home. They're going to know who you are. They're going to remember your name. They're going to learn some things about you, and you're going to learn some things about them. And you know what that's going to help us to do? That's going to help us to Acts 4:32. And that's going to expedite that process so that we are together. That's something that you can do as a family, because practicing hospitality takes the cooperation of everyone in the house. It's going to help to expose members to Christian homes. I just said that not everyone here comes to worship as a family. And that's true of those who are single, but that's also true of some who are married and leave an unbelieving spouse at home. Or perhaps they grew up, they're new members, and they didn't grow up in a Christian home. If you have them over to your house, they can see what a Christian home is and the way it functions. And yes, you're putting your best foot forward in a situation like that, but they can see what it's supposed to be. So they can see that and experience that. It helps us to help one another. Think about this. Think about what your home is for you. When you go to work or you go to school and you're exposed to the negativity that's out there in the world, isn't it nice to get home and you can shut the door and you can leave that negative stuff outside? You turn the TV off, you put your devices away, and you've got a place of solace. Maybe there's somebody in the congregation, maybe there's somebody that you know that could really use that environment that you have in your home for a couple of hours. When you practice hospitality and you invite someone into your home, maybe for them it's a place where they can come and they can relax for maybe just a couple of hours. And that would do a world of good for them. Our children need to learn how to practice hospitality, how to extend hospitality. In the book of Hebrews at chapter 13 and verse 16, Hebrews 13 verse 16 says, "But do not forget to do good and to share, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased." Our children need to learn how to do that. They need to learn to do good and to share, and hospitality is one way that they can do that. And they need to learn how to do that by watching mom and dad practice hospitality without grumbling. Remember 1 Peter 4, verse 9? What happens when you grumble about practicing hospitality? Yeah, we got to get the house cleaned up because your mom invited these people over. And your children hear that? How's that going to help them at all? Yeah, dad went and invited these people over. Now we've got to do this and we've got to do that. No, it's not just the people who are benefiting from the hospitality that don't need to hear the grumbling. Your children don't need to hear the grumbling either. So it's important that we practice hospitality, that we do it as a family, and that we do so without grumbling. And as I've said, not every member of this congregation is in a position where they can open their home and extend hospitality. That's why it's important for those of us who can to do it, because not everyone can. Maybe you can, and you haven't been. I want you to think about your family being involved in practicing hospitality. Now that we've had people into our home, let's shift gears just a moment, and let's think about taking our family and its influence outside the home. Let's think about evangelism for a moment. When we talk about evangelism, a phrase that often comes to my mind is personal evangelism, and that is the efforts that we put forth as individuals in trying to save those who are lost, and trying to teach people the gospel. Personal evangelism, yes, we need to be involved in that, but families? How about families making evangelism a priority as a family? If you are a family, and especially if you're in the process of raising children, you're probably busy, aren't you? You're probably busy. You're busy with a lot of things. Use that. Use that busy schedule to the benefit of influencing others for the gospel of Jesus Christ. You might be busy with your children being involved in sports, and you go to practice maybe once or twice a week. Maybe you laugh, once or twice would be great. No, we have to be there all week long. You're at practice, and then you go to the games, and you're there with other families. Maybe they're playing an instrument, so there's practice. And then there's the show. There's where they get to perform. Maybe they're involved in competitions, and they're working with other people their age to build something, to put something together, or they're working together, and they go off for a competition. You're there with other families helping with that. Maybe you're involved in scouting. Maybe in homeschool, you're involved in a co-op. You're with other people. You're with other families. Here's what you need to do. You need to let your light shine. You've got unique opportunities that I don't have anymore. Our children are not that age any longer. We're past that stage of life. There are others here who don't have children. They're not involved in these things. We don't have the busy schedule you do, but your busy schedule gives you the opportunity to let your light shine and to be a good influence. Let me tell you what's happening here. Some of these other families that are there, some of them are going to be struggling. They're going to be looking for something, and they look and they see your family. They see your family and they realize you've got something they don't. And so they're going to ask you about it. They're going to talk to you about that. And you're going to talk about your faith. Now, am I saying that if you get your family involved in these things, then all of a sudden we're going to start converting everybody on the team? No, not likely. It could happen. That'd be great. Not likely. But it will happen. It will happen. So think about your family being involved in evangelism. And I want to hit the pause button again, and I want to express some praise for our young people who invite their friends to come to church with them. It's amazing. It's amazing to see. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to keep doing that. I want you to keep doing that even when you're not young anymore. I want you to keep doing what you're doing and invite people to come. And your generation is going to come up, and another generation is going to come up behind you that's going to be involved in that, and the kingdom's going to grow and grow and grow. So keep doing that. That's something that families are doing to help to spread the gospel. So keep that up. You've got a busy schedule. We sympathize with you. Use that busy schedule to spread the gospel. Here's one more thing. Here's one more thing I want us to consider. Something that the family will contribute to the local congregation is to produce elders and deacons. Men who serve as elders and men who serve as deacons have to fulfill qualifications. And some of these qualifications are what we would call family qualifications. Looking at elders in Titus chapter 1 and verse 6, if a man is blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination, that man can be qualified to serve as an elder. In 1 Timothy at chapter 3, verses 4 and 5, one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? So in order to serve as an elder, a man has to desire the position, has to have other qualities regarding his character, but there are family qualifications as well. Has to be married, has to be married to a faithful Christian, has to keep control of his house, do a good job raising his family, and apparently has to have a gray suit. No, you don't have to have a gray suit. But you have to have those family qualifications in order to serve. So a wife is going to help her husband or be a hindrance to her husband's serving. How about deacons? Chapter 3, verses 11 and 12. Likewise, their wives must be reverent, not slanderers, temperate, faithful in all things. Let deacons be the husbands of one wife, ruling their children and their own houses well. Something else about the qualifications for an elder, if you look up in 1 Timothy 3 and at verse 2, it says a bishop, it's another word for elder, for an overseer, a bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable. We go back to hospitality. The elder is going to have the cooperation of his wife with that particular qualification to be hospitable. The wife and the children have to help him with that qualification. They're qualifying men to serve in the capacity of elders and deacons is vital to the future of a church. And so families, young families, need to make this a goal, that we're going to make sure that dad is qualified to serve as a deacon and as an elder. And that's something that a family needs to work on, and that's something that a family can contribute to the local congregation. I'm convinced that a family will never play an important role in the local church until the church is important to that family. Is the church important to your family? It's one thing to have Joshua 24:15 hanging on the wall. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. It's one thing to have that hanging up in your house somewhere. It's another thing entirely to be doing it. Are you doing it? I know our families here are doing that. But there's always room for improvement. Always room for improvement. Every member of this congregation is important. Going back to Ephesians chapter 4, verse 16, every member here, married or single, you're here because God has put you here right now. You have something to supply to this congregation that we need. But we've been talking to the families today. You have some unique opportunities. You have some unique things that you bring as a family that will help the church here tremendously. Have your family plugged in. And let's make Knollwood the best church that it can be to God's glory. Not to ours, but to God's glory. Thank you so much for your kind attention. If you're here and you're not yet a Christian, not yet a child of God, then you need to become one so you can be a part of God's family. As we said, God doesn't have any grandchildren. God only has children. Are you a child of God? Do you believe that Jesus is the Son of God? If you do, then act upon that belief by repenting of your sins, confessing your faith, and being baptized in water to have those sins washed away, to be born again as a child of God. If we can help you with that, or we can help you with any spiritual need you may have, would you let us know by coming forward as we stand and sing this song?